Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the wonderful little nation. You've got to really love this country, especially because we're the only country that allows 1080 to be used for outdoor use. Everywhere else it's illegal, which is incidentally why it kills all the deer and the possums and the local bird life and everything like that to maintain our wonderful pristine bush free of life. My very special guest is none other than number three.
And the highest polling not tainted by the Len Brown scandal.
Well, you do want to make sure you don't get tainted by Brown.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's not the case for the city currently.
No.
Yeah. Now, speaking of which, we've got a protest coming up, and as a long-time activist, I've been to countless protests. This is the first one that I will ever attend. Maybe it might be the last one as well, of somebody actually of a right-wing persuasion doing the protesting, because protesting is a left-wing thing, isn't it?
It is.
I was criticised by Will Ryan a number of years ago, saying that, Vinnie, you never go to any right-wing protests. Well, bro, there aren't any! Right-wingers take personal responsibility for problems and then go off and solve them. Left-wingers come together with a large group of other people who've got the same complaints so they can continue to complain together and think that they've got a majority. Am I wrong? Maybe that's a bit too, I don't know, accurate. But yeah, I mean, in terms of actually protesting, you've protested before about things, haven't you?
Yeah, I've many years ago we had the Walk for Capitalism when I was in the Libertarians Party. Got a dozen people together, so not very successful. I've turned up to Waitangi a couple of times, handful of us. So yeah, most of the protesting I did when I was younger was actually counter-protesting, like the GE marches and things like that. So, you know, I couldn't get my own protest together. I had to piggyback off other people's. So this is really my first protest that I've ever organised, and probably the biggest one as well. Who knows how many people's going to come, but the amount of positive feedback I've been getting, 75% of people I talk to are like, yes, we've got to get rid of them. Yes, we'd love to come along to the protest. I think this is going to be a biggie.
Well, let's hope so. Mm. I have my reservations and doubts that it's going to accomplish a whole lot, because in my experience, protesting accomplishes nothing.
Well, yeah, it may not get Len Brown to resign on itself, but we need to maintain constant pressure.
Yes.
He thinks it's all blown over. He thinks he can go back to photo opportunities, etc. And we need to be constantly on his ass, letting him know that it's not over, Len. Nobody's forgetting. We're going to keep holding you to account until you're gone.
Until such a time as the mainstream media stops paying it any attention and people forget because they're watching X Factor. I see, that's the laugh of approval. It's unfortunate, you know, because if you're trying to discuss serious political issues, it becomes apparent very quickly early on in the piece that people don't have the time nor the inclination to engage seriously with political issues. Even people who are members of political parties and registered voters who are actually quite passionate about their politics are indeed very, very unwilling to do anything to actually affect politics. They believe that democracy is something that you do once every 4 years by ticking a box for the person that you haven't studied, don't know what their policy is.
Yep, and let's be fair, people are time poor. They have lives to live, they've got to put food on the table, they've got to pay the rent, they've got to go to their jobs. I routinely work about 60 hours a week in my day job, and then I go home and spend the next few hours working on politics until I go to sleep. So I'm essentially working from dawn to dusk. I'm on annual leave for the next 2 weeks to promote the protest. I'm not on a holiday, I'm working. So, I mean, if you really want to affect change and get a voice across, it's an incredible amount of hard work. And I don't blame people for saying, well, you know, I'm busy. It's unfortunate that they actually have to dedicate so much more time out of their spare time to change these issues.
It's a disillusioning process I've found. For example, when Occupy Auckland started up, I was told by one of the occupiers that this is it, it's the revolution, and so on and so forth, and it suddenly felt like I was a salty sea dog of some description, virtually laughing at the concept that one movement is suddenly going to change everything, especially one that's obtaining any kind of media coverage and what have you, because it always winds up getting subverted and then ruthlessly crushed after people have forgotten about it.
And people just get bored.
Yeah.
It's hard to drag out an issue for months and months. I mean, the Len Brown issue really is quite unique in that respect. This was broken, what, in November, October? And months later, we're still talking about it. The mainstream media is still covering it every chance they get. This is quite a unique issue, and yeah, we certainly shouldn't waste it. Let's keep the pressure on until he goes.
Yeah. I mean, do you really think that he's actually going to wind up going? Or is it just going to be like one of those things that happens where there will be a bit of a scandal and then there'll be a little bit of a public attention and then it'll eventually fade away and they continue to do whatever they were doing beforehand without really much intervention from the public?
I don't know. I like to be optimistic. I wouldn't dedicate so much time to it were I not. But the great thing about this scandal is it's a scandal that keeps on giving. First we have this...
As did Len Brown. Oh, no, we did it. Yes.
But I mean, even before the election, his scandalous financial mismanagement, rates going up 10% annually in some areas, the spending keeps on going up, it keeps on getting wasted on skateboard ambassadors. We've got a bloody artificial sand pit over by the viaduct now. The borrowing, $1 billion last year, $1.2 billion this year. It's going to be $10 billion by the end of this term. The constant house prices going up. It's not all Len Brown's fault, but I can tell you a lot of his policies are contributing to that.
Yeah.
And then there's his personal scandals. Free hotel rooms. $40,000 of hotel room upgrades.
Whoa!
Yep, and I mean, even before this, there were the credit card scams when he was mayor of Manukau. There was the...
Oh, could you explain that a little?
He bought dinner and wine and things on his council credit card and got busted.
Oh, I recall, yes.
Even in, I think it would have been the 2010 election, there was the controversy over him using... property owned by the Manukau, I think it's the Manukau Pacific Trust, to put up his billboards, value of $3,000. That trust is headed by a major contributor to his campaign. There is, and you know, you don't really see that on the media, that never really got covered, but there is a long trend of dodgy dealings and corruption from this mayor.
The likes of which nobody cared about or heard about until he dipped his nuggets in some sweet and chilli sauce.
And then suddenly it gets interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if you put a hot girl in, and attach that to a story, of course it becomes a little bit more interesting.
Well, she is a burlesque dancer. It's got all the hallmarks of a fantastic scandal.
She was a burlesque dancer as well. Oh my God, it just keeps getting worse, poor old Len Brown.
And I guess the worst thing he could have done is get caught by a prostitute. So
he got caught by a prostitute doing all of this. No.
It would have been worse if he had, I guess. That's the only thing worse he could have done.
Okay. Well, you know, at least he wasn't purchasing porn with his parliamentary credit card, as has happened to some other politicians.
Yeah, that was a bit silly.
I'm just kind of starting to see the length of debauchery and scandal within New Zealand politicians, and you just wonder, how much of it's actually not being reported on at all? Like, how many of our politicians are actually kind of dirty, but they're just holding back on the blackmail and the media until such a time as that's convenient?
No, I mean, lots of politicians have skeletons in their closet. I mean, as John Key said, it's hard to find anyone that's lived an entire life of blameless excellence. I mean, if that were the prerequisite for getting into politics, Parliament would be empty, I'm sure. With Len Brown, as I've said before, I don't care about his affair. That's his private life. But everything else he's done, the corruption, the financial mismanagement, the hanky-panky on the job, you know, that's something we should definitely be focusing on. And there is a long history of this sort of thing going on, so we can't let him get away with it now.
Well, funnily enough, the sex scandal provided an opening.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, exploitation can be a really bad thing, except if it's as particular incidents used to exploit the weaknesses of somebody who's actually doing bad things constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you say that that's actually the case in Len Brown, that he's actually been kind of doing bad things pretty much constantly, but it's taken this public scandal in order to bring light to some of these issues?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've heard it said before, the media doesn't do stories about issues, they do things about people. And all this previous corruption, the credit card, the sign on a trust property, etc. Those are all just issues and sideshows. But then once you get this person involved, oh, the media's right over it.
Well, I don't like mainstream media because of that fact. If it bleeds, it leads, or if it... That's not a...
a terrible term to use.
Yeah. Especially if we're talking about a woman's reproductive tract. Now,
let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. And it occurs to me that because of the fact that the media is not doing what I would consider to be doing journalistic due diligence, somebody somewhere must be covering up somehow for these kind of things. How deep does it go? Where are these connections? How is it even possible for this to happen? That's my real worry about this, because if you have a corrupt politician and it's being covered up by a corrupt media, how do we know that anything that is going on in our society that's being reported on is even true, or even if there's a deeper story, if we don't have other, shall we say, independent media like myself to hold them to account?
Yep, and how many things are going on that we don't know about? Cameron Slater has indicated there's more to come. Dick Quacks has indicated there's more to come.
Is actually a dude named Dick Quacks?
Yes, he's a councillor for Howick.
Well,
he was an Olympic athlete.
Oh, really? Yeah. Looks like a duck, quacks like a duck.
He's a good guy. I've heard rumours about other women. I mean, I can't say anything more than that. I've only heard rumours. But I suspect there is a lot more to come out of this. And the longer Len Brown stays on, the more the scandal's going to keep giving, I think. What we've got, the evidence we've got already, maybe he can survive on that and tough it out, and 6 months later people will forget about it. But there's going to be more. I'm sure there is.
Well, one can only hope. But, again, with my conspiratorial mind, I always think that there's something deeper going on, and that maybe even the scandal with Len Brown is covering up for something else that the media should actually be paying attention to right now. What if there's some other kind of big plans in the works? What if the government's doing something right now that, for example, is being lessened by the blow lessened on it as a result of the increased media coverage on Len Brown? Deep sea oil drilling, for example, springs to mind. There was an article in the paper not too long ago that Anadarko was drilling a new hole off of the coast of New Zealand, and they found nothing.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Which just goes to show how safe deep sea oil drilling is, because there was nothing leaked.
You know, I mean, that's the only time when it's safe. On the one hand here, this is this big scandal, like they always tend to distract from other issues that are going on, and the media format that I see is like this this 30-second soundbite type of thing. It's not like an interview like you or I are doing now, where you've got extended periods of time to explain ideas in detail if you wish to.
Yep.
It's more about tiny little snippets of information that don't really tell the whole story, distract people from the reality and keep them focused elsewhere.
Yep. I mean, remember it's legendary now that Lindsay Perigo quit TVNZ in the early 90s, labelling it brain dead because all the interviews were cut down to quick 5-minute things. The media started running on sound bites. Whereas prior to that, you know, you would fill up a whole current affairs show just interviewing one person. The mainstream media now runs on very small snippets, small sound bites that they can get into a 2-minute piece, and you don't really see the whole depth of an issue.
I think that this is a deliberate agenda to dumb down the public, to reduce our attention span and our willingness to sit through interviews that would indeed connote some form of understanding on real issues. Mm. That way the understanding and the implementation of issues and policy lays specifically with the person doing it, not the public to which they're supposed to be accountable.
Just as a side issue, perhaps Twitter's a symptom of that dumbing down. Messages that can only be 150 letters.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's surprising. You can fit a lot of intelligence into only a few sentences of dialogue. Mm. I think Mark Twain once said that those who read newspapers are less informed than those who read nothing at all. And you know, there's things like that that can be done. Like, as I said to you during the break, the large print giveth and the small print taketh away.
Yes.
You know, sound bites can actually connote something real, but the problem is the world's not a frickin' simple place.
No.
It's actually really complicated. You actually can't explain everything in 30 seconds. And I think this is possibly the reason why the general public still vote for one or either of the mainstream parties, is because they're too dumb to know what those parties stand for.
I won't label them dumb, but to a degree.
Shall we say old habits, not informed enough.
Shall
we say? So if we're capable of informing the general public, you would wind up having representation in government that would be accurate rather to the truth of the matter and what a government should actually be there to do, i.e. protecting people's rights and the general comings and goings of entrepreneurs and business people and what have you to prevent criminals from taking over the country. Unfortunately, the government has become the criminals that have taken over the country because the people don't know that they're criminals.
Yeah. And it's surprising when we have, what, 15 to 20, well, have probably just under 20 registered political parties by the next election, yet we're still dominated by just two.
Well, and again, the Greens seem to be capitalising on this disenfranchisement quite remarkably. What are they, 11% now in the last election?
I've seen them polling up to 14% at times.
And so we've got those people on the left who want to combine the Greens with Labour, and I spoke to Ian Wishart and I asked him how he was voting in the, I think it was the 2012 election, or it might have been 2008, I forget which, and he said it's like shuffling the chairs on the Titanic.
Yep.
The ship's going down, man.
Yeah.
You know, what are you supposed to do with something like that? It's kind of like you become, or at least I have become, really angry. And after your anger subsides, then you become almost realistic about the situation, or if you want to be technical, depressed.
Yeah.
and that's kind of it. You become resigned to failure. Because the cards are stacked against you, okay? Like, if you want truth in this country, if you want effective public policy, if you want freedom and private property to be protected, if you want economic health and well-being, there is nobody to vote for that will win.
Mm. Yep. And, I mean, I've been a bit of an ACT supporter over the many years. And for me, their economic policy is very coherent. It's the sort of thing I support. But they've been derailed by sideshows and scandals with John Banks, etc. And the media's talking more about the sideshows, and nobody actually knows what ACT's about. They don't hear any of that stuff. They just hear the scandal.
That's true. No policy really seems to make it in. Like, you ask any voter who they voted for, and they go, oh, I voted Green, I voted National, I voted Labour. And then you ask them, okay, name me one policy that they implemented.
Mm.
Blank stare. And that's the vast majority of voters that I've spoken to. They vote for people without having a single a clue as to what they're voting for or why.
It's almost tribalistic, really. This is my tribe, that's who I'm supporting.
Yeah. I'm the only gay Eskimo in my tribe. And it occurs to me that this is something that will create a reaction. You know how they say in physics, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So you can ignore the people for so long, you can misinform them for so long. Who was it? Was it Bob Marley says you can fool some of the people all of the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Despite the very depressing realities that we've been discussing here, I still feel and see, because of my my field in which I work, a resurgence. Like, it's almost like humanity is splitting into these two factions. Those who are accepting the mind control programming of the media and the manipulation of politicians, and they're kind of like falling off to one side. Maybe the majority of people are falling into these traps over here. But there is a growing movement of people whose eyes are becoming far more open, and they see the problems for what they really are.
Yep.
I can only hope that those people do not lose their motivation to contribute to society in a positive way, as I believe that you have and are still doing.
Well, the advent of the internet's been fantastic for that as well, because I remember growing up and just blindly accepting what I read in the newspaper, and I thought the newspapers just told the truth. And then, of course, we had the debacle over BZP and all the disaster stories, hospitalisations, rah, 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 and I'm going through this, and I know that it's lies.
Well, it comes to the point where you're like, okay, problem solving, all right? You're a problem solver by nature, right?
I try to be.
All right. So, how do you solve a problem that's somebody else's fault? Yeah, it's a real puzzler, isn't it?
You know? Yeah. And I mean, the mainstream media is a bit of a problem, getting your message out there accurately. I often find on the rare cases that I do get covered by them, you know, it's full of inaccuracies, but I guess it's just what happens.
Would you mind listing some of those inaccuracies?
I
heard this one interview that you did on Radio Live where the guy was just accusing you of trying to take political advantage of the Len Brown scandal and what have you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no secret. You know, I stood for the mayoralty before, and if there's another election, I will stand for the mayoralty again. But I wouldn't be doing this if Len Brown weren't such a terrible mayor, if he weren't corrupt. Yeah. If he was financially competent, if he wasn't screwing around on the job, I wouldn't be running this campaign right now. It'd be business as usual, and I'd just promote our ideas. But the fact that he is such a terrible mayor and he's got to go, of course I'm going to do this. He's also trying to paint us... initially he thought we were a left-wing party, and we said, well, no, we're not. What I probably should have made clearer is that we're actually a non-partisan party. We're not left-wing or right-wing, we just want lower rates. But he instantly painted us as right-wing, which simply isn't the case.
No, it's not, is it?
Mm.
Well, what's happening then in terms of this is, as I saw the person in the media interviewing you, as I just mentioned, there's this whole big issue which you're bringing up, facts, evidence, examples, and this is what the media does.
Mm.
Flip it around, make it about personality. Oh, you're just a right-winger, you want to be elected.
Yep.
Right? Therefore, ignore all the corruption. That's the impression
that
I got.
Yeah, it's an attack on me for what I'm trying to do, as opposed to dealing with the issue, which is, you know, quite unacceptable to have in a mayor of Auckland.
This has not happened to me before by the mainstream media. How did it feel when it happened to you?
I just take it on the chin. I'm a bit of a cynic, I guess.
Well, did you go in there expecting BS?
I mean
broadcasting standards.
In all seriousness, I'm quite new to having radio interviews. This is probably maybe my fifth or sixth. Previously, they've been fairly soft. I've done things on BFM and some small ethnic stations, etc. So I knew that Marcus Lush would probably be a bit of a challenge. I was prepared for some tough, accusatory questions, and I guess I wasn't disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Well, where does that leave you then? I mean, I'm of the opinion that we need a media split in this country where all these mainstream apparatus and everything, with the advent of digital technology, digital television, the internet and whatnot, I don't think there is any longer any need for these massive centralised media organisations. And we were talking out on the deck about how if you want to instill libertarianism in a society, you need to take it gradually from tyranny all the way eventually over to the other spectrum of liberty. And that's by breaking up centralized control, instilling individual responsibility, and then making little group volunteer organizations and whatnot to start compensating for the government's lack of action, or to replace government current action with voluntarism. Now, I believe the media should be split up and destroyed in much the same way. I don't mean destroy as in, let's go in there with sledgehammers. I'm talking about destroy by splitting up. You take good reporters who start up their own radio show online. Yep. They start sucking a bit of the audience out of the mainstream media. And then you get an encouragement based upon that one person's success, which would lure even more people out of those mainstream media organizations. You'd be thinking about the more credible people who don't like editorial privilege messing with their stories. Those who crave independence would probably be more likely the ones to split apart from these major organizations, start their own small ones, and actually, as a result, you would wind up with a full spectrum of true coverage of issues from which eventually people would no longer want to listen to the mainstream media anymore because they feel that it is simply not relevant.
Yep, you can only do it through market competition. You certainly can't do it through regulation. But we also need to keep in mind what the actual job of the media is. It's not to report. The job of the media is to run a profitable company, and they do that by selling advertising time and entertaining their listeners so that they'll listen to the ads. So we just need to look at the media, what it is. It's another enterprise to make a profit, and that's fine. That's fine. But we shouldn't delude ourselves into thinking that the job of the media is to tell the truth and report things. It's a profitable enterprise.
Well, I've got this opinion, and what I do is I don't want to full on become like so wealthy and powerful because of my media empire that anybody who attacks me, I can just demonize them and run a smear campaign and just derail their argument and whatnot. I don't want that kind of power. I want to be able to have enough money so that I'm living comfortably without the anxiety of bills having need be paid, so that I can continue to do my work and report the truth without having people telling me what I can and cannot report on. That's essentially my desire. And to create the largest online selection of interviews with people from all sorts of political spectrums of thought, spirituality, science, and all sorts of different topics, the largest one in world history. That's what I'm creating with this radio show. Now, if it was possible for me to have a media organization that's running profitably, based upon telling the truth, I would really like to do that. The problem is, at the moment, I'm trying to solicit the community bank.
Yep.
So there'll be members of the community who go, I don't like the mainstream media. Vinny's doing what the media should be doing. I'm going to donate some money to him. So I'm recouping my costs and making profit by telling the truth.
Yep.
And I'm surprised that I've managed to make that work, okay? Because, as we all know, is it the first law of economics? If you're telling the truth, you're going to be a broke-ass motherfucker.
But you've identified a market as well, and it's clearly not as profitable as owning bloody Fox TV, but...
Ironically, they're not making any money.
Oh, okay.
And indeed, back in... might have been 2007, 2006, I think. The primetime news programs like Fox News, CNN at 6 o'clock were down in the ratings, and the number one rating for that time slot was the Chuck Norris Total Gym. so people aren't listening to the... You're familiar with the term paper tiger?
Yes.
Well, they perceive to have all this power and all this credibility, but they don't actually have any. They perceive to have all this money, but they don't actually have any. And even more evidence of that, who's the former CEO of MediaWorks, TV3, Radio Live, who became the government communications minister and then brokered a $37 million bailout for TV3 because of unpaid broadcasting fees, because people wouldn't want to advertise them because the advertising's so ineffective at getting the money?
I'm not sure who that was.
You know, that yeah. Stephen Joyce.
Oh, right, right.
Okay, the current government communications minister. Don't you think it's a conflict of interest for somebody to be in a CEO of a major corporation, then brokers a deal to bail out their corporation, he was the former CEO as the communications minister for the government, which incidentally then gives the Prime Minister the Prime Minister's hour cost-free in the middle of an election.
Yeah, yeah, right? Most definitely.
That is New Zealand corruption for you. Because he's a CEO, because he's a minister... It's not corruption.
Yeah, it's definitely a wee bit dodgy, I think.
Yeah. And so my point is that mainstream media, despite their best efforts, can no longer make profits off of lies. And that's allowed people like me to start making money off of the truth. And actually, I get demonised and attacked. Yeah. Oh, Vinny, you're making money off the truth. Well, at least I'm not lying to people, bro.
Though at the same time, you'll have media organisations which have a clear bias. I mean, there's Fox News. Yeah. The Paul Henry Show. Very entertaining, love it, but obviously incredibly biased. But I think that's fine as well. I don't think that the media has a duty to be impartial. They're running a profitable company, so they do it however's fine. And you've identified a market where impartiality is quite important to you, so once again, that's working as well. So there's all sorts of markets.
I disagree, because somebody at Occupy Auckland a number of years ago came up to me and go, Vinny, I really like your news because it's not biased. And I go, that's not true. It's totally biased. It's just the kind of bias you want.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I'm biased in favour of whatever the truth might be. I mean, I don't hold rigid beliefs. And I mean, if somebody produces me evidence that proves beyond shadow of a doubt that one of my previously held beliefs is wrong, I drop that belief like a hot potato really, really quickly, because I don't think that it's actually a bright idea to knowingly deny what the truth is because you don't feel comfortable with it.
Yep.
Right, and I think that's part of the problem with our country today is New Zealanders, my fellow New Zealanders, you don't want the truth anymore, do you? Okay. I understand that it's painful sometimes, and it's quite frustrating to have your previously held beliefs challenged and eviscerated, but there's just no excuse anymore.
Yeah.
Really, we don't have a choice. We have to look at the things that are truly going on without that kind of one-eyed sort of approach, without loyalty to political parties, without loyalty to ideology. Let's look at the facts, let's look at the truth, and then let's run our society from that basis and that basis alone.
Yep.
I think that's pretty fair.
Yep, no argument from me.
You know? So, the old saying in World War II, if God be for us, who be against us?
Well, both sides thought God was for them.
Yeah. But you and I, we're for truth, justice, liberty, freedom, etc.
Yep.
Who could be against us?
Plenty of people, to be honest.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've discovered over my radio career, interviewing people like Thomas Sheridan, who's an Irish author of a book called Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, where he goes into these personality traits of psychopaths. Now, the American Medical Journal states that a psychopath is a person who's generally smiling, very friendly, and very enchanting when you first meet them, but ultimately there's no depth to their personality. And they don't have any long-lasting relationships.
They don't hold jobs very well.
No, actually, they do hold jobs very well and usually get promoted relatively quickly and indeed manage to find their way into positions of power and control. Because that's the one thing that psychopaths crave, is power, control, you know. And it occurs to me that what the American Medical Journal... Sorry, the American Medical Journal goes on to state is that there are industries that these people, psychopaths, people with no conscience, basically what one would dub as the classical definition of evil, they become the power brokers of society. CEOs in business, politics, media, law, and medicine, and religion. If I were to ask you to describe the six central pillars of how public policy is made and influenced, you'd come up with those exact six pillars, wouldn't you?
Yep, that sounds pretty reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that religion has such a reach into politics.
Yeah. But here's the thing. What if most of them are run by psychopaths?
Well, I mean, that's probably a prerequisite for running a church, surely.
Oh, yeah. But I'm talking about a full spectrum again here. Mm. If we've got this this problem here with... the heck is going on here? We're having a little bit of a problem with the screen behind us. Oh, well.
Bump the cable again.
Yeah. What occurs to me is that if the world is run by psychos... then they'd wind up implementing policy that would benefit their psychopath, wouldn't they? And what do we see happening nowadays? We see policy being implemented worldwide that actually benefits criminals rather than law-abiding citizens. If anything, it does the direct opposite. It turns law-abiding citizens into criminals that need to be surveilled, and it turns criminals that pass those laws into being holier than thou and being untouchable.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of merit in what you say there, especially when we look at things like gun laws, drug laws, private property regulations, etc. I mean, gun laws certainly remove the right of people to defend themselves and then enrich the criminals with guns. Same thing with drug laws, and even the violation of private property rights, doing just regular things like building a shed on your back lawn, etc., which everyone should be able to do, can turn you into a criminal.
Well, I think I had an allegation in a local paper one time that a lady was trying to install a bird bath on her property in West Auckland, and it cost her $10,000 in consultancy fees from the local council.
Isn't that outrageous?
Outrageous. And
whose business is it?
And a friend of mine told me that he built his house totally illegally, totally without council consents. And then the council found out about it about 5 years later. And the reason why he didn't want to get the council consents in the first place is because he thought that it was far too expensive.
Which it is.
And then he got busted, had to go to court, spend a whole lot of time in court and a whole lot of money. And then he worked out, had he done it the legal route, it would have cost him nearly twice as much as doing it illegally.
And I recall a case where a landlord was prosecuted for, I think he had about half a dozen properties where he had made alterations which didn't get council consents. And you've got bureaucrats and ministers talking on the radio about how this is terrible and we've stomped them out and look out anyone else who does this. Yeah. What did he actually do wrong? Just exercise his private property rights.
And again, this is part of the whole Behind the Green Mask UN Agenda 21 protocol.
Yep.
Eventually, there will be no private property except owned by mega corporations and where they're slaves. Right? I mean, basically, like, from here today to then, that's the plan. And I think that this is actually probably the central thing that people need to really be studying is the implementation of Agenda 21 among local councils, because it surpasses all of the national sovereignty that we're supposed to be having. I mean, imagine if globalization achieved full fruition, that was one law for everybody everywhere. That meant if you didn't like the law, there would never be any form of escape. And in order to change the law, you'd have to change the entire world's minds.
Yeah, and I'm not a patriot or a nationalist. I don't get all wound up when I see a flag or anything like that. But the good thing about national sovereignty is that you can escape if the laws are oppressive. It's also one of the great things about the federal system in the US is that you can have so many different systems, and it gives individual states a chance to try a different approach, as they've done with cannabis legalization, etc. It's unfortunate that the federal government now has so much power in the US to go in and override those things. So states' rights over there are fantastic, I think.
Well, they were fantastic until such a time as the federal government can wind up having even more power, more than its fair share of power.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I think one congressman stood up and he asked the rest of the Congress, what are the three branches of government? And they said, oh, the executive, the Congress, and the Senate.
Which is not the case.
It's not the case. It's actually the federal government, the state government, and the people. The people being the central power structure, because it is the will of the people that tells each of those successive governments what to do.
I would have said the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary.
No, not at all. And it occurs to me that because people don't know how their country is supposed to be run, it allows it to be taken advantage of. Much like if a 16-year-old girl doesn't know what's going to happen to her if she gets applied with huge quantities of alcohol, she might wind up getting date raped. And I think that's what we've got, is we've got a nationalistic date raping going on. Cheers, bro.
Cheers.
That's what occurs to me. It actually kind of frightens me. It's like we're being taken advantage of and applied with these little schemes and little lies and what have you in order to create the society that somebody else wants. Not what I want, what you want, but people that are well out of the public eye. Right? You know how much Len Brown really controls in this city? Nothing. He's a figure, he's a puppet, just like John Key does. I mean, and if they weren't, why would they be passing the exact same policies as being passed everywhere else in the frickin' world? Why would Operation 8, a massive terror raid, happen in 17 countries at the exact same time if there was no global coordination? This is what globalization has done. It has reduced national sovereignty to the point where there is no freedom for anybody globally, period.
And when I talk about the benefits of globalization, I'm not referring to greater coordination by governments. I'm referring to free trade.
And free trade, again, as it gets sold to people, it sounds like a really good idea, but they've always got these little clauses to manipulate and destroy. I mean,
we're not having proper free trade, it's managed
exactly,
trade.
Exactly, just like we're not having proper capitalism either. There's no proper liberty, no proper capitalism, and no proper free trade. Hello, global depression, anyone? I mean
the
closest, make sense?
Yeah, the closest examples we might see to pure capitalism would be in Dubai, where unfortunately your social freedoms are just about nil, and Hong Kong, but even that's not pure, but still pretty damn good, and they are very wealthy in both countries.
Yeah, apart from the people that live in the human battery farms called apartments in Hong Kong. You ever seen this? There's a great article out
I did see that, actually, yeah.
I think that's again refers back to Agenda 21. That's how
it
all
It's unfortunate that people can choose to live in those things or not.
I don't know. Sometimes you're restricted. Your choices are restricted by how much economic power you have.
Oh, of course, of course, yep.
And I was just wondering, there's...
Imagine they passed a law to have minimum property sizes in Hong Kong, though. Just how expensive would property become?
Yeah.
It would be prohibitively expensive. Those poor people wouldn't even be able to afford to live in Hong Kong. I'd say they're probably better off under the current system. When Dick Hubbard passed the minimum apartment sizes here, what, about eight years ago, something like that.
Really? He actually passed minimum apartment sizes? Did he make them smaller than the current minimum?
No!
Because I've been in some of these apartments, man. It was like, you cannot swing a cat, you can't swing a guinea pig in these things.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there really are some shoeboxes out there. It's not the sort of lifestyle I would want, but that doesn't mean that other people can't choose to do it based on their economic means. And, if we prevent them from making that choice, we're just forcing up the cost of property and making them worse off.
Well, yeah, in fact, that's
I live in a small apartment. I'm fine with it.
You're welcome to it. I was like, a mate of mine was doing some work around at a locksmith's in Remuera, and there was a two-bedroom unit that was in poor condition that was $750 a week.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it?
The property prices are coming have just gone out of control. I'm not saying they're going out of control, they are out of control.
I completely agree with you, and it is mostly government policy doing it. It's not just the council, though this urban limit does have a big impact on that. The amount of regulation and hoops you have to go through, the amount that developers are required to contribute to the council. I know everyone says developers should pay their fair share. That's fair enough, but it does lift up the cost of property, so you need to find a good balance on that. The Resource Management Act is hugely responsible for property prices as well. The restrictions it puts on what you can do with your land, the amount of regulations you have to follow, those all add up to these costs.
which is, again, part of it. See, that's the problem. That's the problem with Agenda 21. It's basically every single local government policy that's been implemented since the early 90s has fallen basically underneath this exact model of the agenda for the 21st century. It was signed by Jim Bolger, George H.W. Bush on Prince Charles's private yacht in 1992 at the Rio Earth Summit. And that's where this whole thing started. And I fear for the implementation of this. And you know, it's about throwing a spanner in the works and throwing up everything. But, you know, sometimes I get really sad, Stephen, that the domination has gone too far already. And even if we've got good ideas and even if we stand up and fight for them, will be up against such opposition by brainwashed masses who will fight to defend a system that enslaves them.
And one that's made them comfortable and dependent.
That's really depressing. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
I think when you get involved in politics, you go, I mean, like when I got involved in libertarianism, there was this initial, wow, this is a fantastic idea. I can't wait to tell people about it. And then I started telling people about it, and it was all the same oppositional arguments. And I'm going, oh, why don't they get it? And then eventually it's a few years to, oh, I'm disillusioned. I'm taking a break. And I had a few years off.
Yeah. A friend of mine actually got criticised by somebody and saying that they were wrong because they were disillusioned. And I was just like, hold on, disillusion means the removing of an illusion. So
I think it means you're right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, hold on a second. Are you telling me that I'm incorrect because I'm no longer operating under a delusion?
I mean, I think a sense of skepticism and cynicism is probably a wee bit healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Really positive, but I'm also a little bit negative at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And I have this vision of a united world where people actually defend each other and I don't know, like... What they've been doing in the States right now, outside the Super Bowls, we've heard a couple of American talk radio show hosts talk about this, is there used to be these things called tailgate parties. Have you heard of a tailgate
party? No, I haven't.
Well, out in the parking lots of big Super Bowl games and things like that, yeah, hundreds and thousands of people, they put down the tailgate of their car and they've got a barbecue set up or something like that, and there's kids running around and playing everybody.
Heaps of beer.
There are heaps of beer, you know, as you do. And people were having fun. It was like a community sort of effort, you know.
God, that would never happen in New Zealand.
Yeah. I mean, and now what they're doing is they're actually banning that from happening outside there. Oh, because it's a security risk, you know, because one of the terrorists that the government funds might find it difficult to get in past all these tailgates. I'm FBI, I'm coming through. Isn't that a bomb strapped to your chest? Yeah, but I'm FBI, I'm coming through.
Oh, that's so sad that, you know, even spontaneous fun amongst, you know, strangers just getting together and enjoying each other's company could be banned.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're...
It's just like the public liquor bans we have around here now.
Yeah. That actually really sucks, you know. There's fire bans, liquor bans. There's all kinds of bans.
Yeah.
They got more bans than the fucking Big Day Out.
Yeah. And I'm willing to concede that possibly a liquor ban might result in less broken glass in a public park.
Yeah.
Probably does. But does that make it the right thing to do? I don't think it does. You shouldn't have a blanket punishment for everyone when a few people are doing the wrong thing. Get the police to do their job and punish the people doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, either that or you've actually... Maybe we don't need laws. Maybe we need basic understanding of common law and personal responsibility, and that would actually eliminate the need for most laws, because people wouldn't do things that are wrong in a culture where doing the wrong is the wrong thing. Yeah. It's not something you do.
Well, that would take the wide-scale cultural change I don't think will ever happen.
Yeah.
Even I think we need some laws, but just not too many.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to this. If you want to do something simple... if it's part of your private property or whatever, if you do it and you're not hurting anybody or damaging anything, then the law should leave you alone. You know, Am I hurting anybody? No. Am I damaging anybody else's private property? Am I doing something with my own property? Yes, you are. Okay, well, the law, get the hell out of my life.
Yep.
You know, and stay out.
Yep, I think it's pretty simple.
Until such a point as I actually do something which hurts or damages.
Yeah, if you're firing off fireworks onto your neighbours, you know, that's the time for the police to step in.
Yeah.
If you're building smokestacks that are polluting the air around the area, you know, that's where the law steps in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, and that's if the person next door can't resolve it with that other person themselves.
Mm.
And I've also noticed that we've had a detachment from natural justice as well as a detachment from natural law.
Mm.
If people are going to be living together in a peaceful, happy society, don't you think it would actually be the first port of call to go directly to the person next door that they have a problem with, rather than calling noise control or the police first of all? Unless,
yep,
of course, that person becomes disruptive and or violent and there is a necessity for the police. Because otherwise, if it's just, you should have come over and talked to me, bro, I would have done it. You didn't even invite the cops round.
That
kind of thing, if people could be amicable like that, it'd be nice. What's problematic about this is television.
People, you've seen Neighbours at War?
Yeah. I've seen Neighbours at War, and I find if those neighbours weren't at home watching Neighbours at War, they wouldn't be at war because they'd be talking to their neighbours more. Don't be a duck bag. I mean, that's pretty much the that should be the law.
Yeah.
You know, property laws. Don't be a duck, bro.
I think that's a pretty good law.
Yeah. It's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Be a bit draconian, but still.
And I mean, our court system can deal with most of these things. Well, you know, under the theory, our court system should be dealing with these things rather than having blanket regulations telling us what the rules are.
Yeah.
You know. Talk to your neighbour. If that doesn't work out, deal with it through the justice system.
Mm. Have you ever noticed how, or at least in my theory, that stupid laws keep getting followed by stupid people? And they get really stupid people to force intelligent people to follow those laws,
yeah,
blindly.
Yep.
Until eventually, everybody becomes so stupid that they don't even know that there's a law.
Well, there's some people who think that following the law is a moral
obligation,
yeah, or you know, it's the highest moral calling in itself, no matter what the law is. I mean, we've seen what disastrous effects bad law can have throughout history. But some people think, oh, I'm following the law, I'm doing the right thing.
How long did it take for humans to forget that when you obey people in a uniform, they eventually take control and dominate and exterminate you?
It used to be the law, oh, report your neighbour if there's a Jew in the house. So following the law in itself isn't a moral calling at all.
No, not at all. And I think what's happened is the moral fabric of society in and of itself has become disintegrated.
Mm.
We've gone through the public education system,
which has taught us the value of following all authority.
All authority. Where is the moral authority if the only thing you got is authority without morals?
Mm. Well, there isn't any.
I think that's actually a nice positive place to leave it. Okay, so we want to wrap this off now, ladies and gentlemen. I really want you to please, if you can, attend the Len Brown protests on this weekend. Was it on the 15th?
It's on the 22nd of February.
The 22nd of February, sorry.
Yep.
And
12 noon at Brito Mart.
12 noon at Brito Mart. And were you marching up to Aotea Square or something?
We will be going up to Airedale Street via Queen Street.
Where's Airedale Street?
It's a wee bit off Queen Street, not too much. We tried to get Aotea Street. That was booked months ago by some day of prayer, so we're going up to Airedale Street.
Okay, the day of prayer dominates the day of political. That's ironic there.
Yeah, I might pop around at 10 o'clock and do a flyer drop and see if they come down and join us.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
Yep.
Religious people allegedly have morality, you know, and
they'll be upset about the affair, even if I'm not.
Maybe can Len Brown actually have morality? Considering what he does, like you know, trees by their fruits. What kind of a person who has morality would use corrupt credit card payments, lie to everybody, increase all their rates, and have a bit of a freaky day here on the side for 2 years behind his wife's back?
Yeah, well, I guess different people think that their views are moral whether they might be different from another person's views who they think are moral. So maybe Lynn thinks he's still moral, but I certainly don't.
Okay. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the Len Brown stand down protest. Why does affordable Auckland demand Len Brown stand down? Join us on a march from Britomart to Airedale Street, 22nd of February. Leaves Britomart at 12 noon. Too many lies. Rates too high. Sex on the job. What kind of a job? Oh, yeah. Ooh. Okay. And with that, thank you, Stephen Berry.
Thanks very much.
It's been a wonderful interview, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
You are the only exception. You are.